You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight, tomorrow, and in Friday, if we do have a show. The Islanders, unfortunately, they lost to the Panthers today, 3-2. So they're going to play on Friday. Not sure what time that game's going to be. But I welcome you in. I'm coming to you live from the living room of my apartment with five dogs. So you might hear them at some point in time in the next 3 hours. Jacob is producing the show back in the studio in New York. Jacob, hello, hello.
Hello, Anita. How's your evening going?
It's okay. Today was one of those days where, like, I had so much to do that, like, you know, one of those days where, like, you... Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I either... last thing at night before I go to bed or first thing in the morning when I wake up, I put together like a checklist of like all the things I want to accomplish in the course of a day. And I got on this like this roll, and gosh darn it, I was going to complete as many of them as I could today. And like before I knew it, it was like 6:30, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be on the radio in 30 minutes. It was like one of those days. So the day just like flew by me. Just absolutely breezed right by me.
I think for me,
it was one of those days.
The opposite. Literally, I was up at like 7 in the morning, worked out. I had everything done. By the time noon hit, I feel like I accomplished everything else, and I was just waiting to pop up for the show.
No, you know what I think it was? I think you were really looking forward to working with me tonight. I think that's what happened. So it's like, in like, it's kind of like, it's like, it was kind of like Christmas for you, where you're really looking forward to working with somebody, which of course is me. And it's just, it can't come fast enough. And so the day just went by like sand through an hourglass, because you just couldn't wait to spend these 3 hours with me. I think that's really what happened, Jacob.
Christmas in August. Listen, there you go. Can't complain.
So, I don't, you know, I love huge storylines, and let's be honest. I've been filling in for Chris for almost a month now, and I feel like we've been blessed with, haven't we, Jacob, with like, and you've produced a lot of those shows. I feel like we've been blessed with like huge storylines. And so preparing for the show today, I'm like, all right, I was waiting for something to happen today. I was waiting for some kind of ball to drop. Something to happen, and it didn't. So it's, you know, really nothing, no huge breaking news story in our wide, wide world of sport. But we've got a fun show booked for you. Bobby Marks is going to join us at 7:30. Let's talk some NBA. Let's talk some Nets. If you were listening to the Sports Center when we came in, the Nets beat the Bucks last night, 119-116. The spread going into this game was 19. So the Nets were getting 19. Talk about a money line bet. In fact, BetMGM is reporting that there is a bet on the money line that somebody put $600 down. They walked away with close to $8,000. That's nice. It's a nice little chunk of change. And I think it's a smart call, although I am going to ask Bobby Marks. I mean, you know, there's a shot that the Bucks, you know, obviously they want that number one seed. But do they? Does the number, you know, here's the thing in regard to this bubble that I'm realizing, right? And that is, like, there's really no home field advantage. There is, in a sense, in regard to, I guess, the team has very creative marketing people or electronic people that will play, you know, kind of make it a home court advantage feel for these guys in regards to like trying to emulate or trying to create what it's like for them at home on their home court when they're introduced. This whole thing is just so bizarre, isn't it? But you know, obviously, you know, where you want to be in the seating, I'm sure the discussions are happening, whether they're in everyone's hotel room or whatever, wherever they're, maybe they're out, you know, at the barbershop. There are like, I want to say there's like three barbershops in the NBA bubble, and they've hired like four or five of the best barbers in the country to come in and stay in the bubble and cut and, you know, cut fades. But anyway, obviously we're talking matchups you know, what you feel your the most favorable matchup will be. Doesn't it, if you're the one seed, doesn't necessarily mean that the eighth seed is the most favorable matchup for you. Maybe you want to be the two seed because you feel the seventh seed would be the more favorable matchup. Anyway, just food for thought. So I'm excited to have Bobby Marks on. Former executive, knows the Nets better than most. And here's another thing. Like, so many people made a big deal about this. And I get that it was a big deal because the line was plus 19. But the Bucks, they rested their players down the stretch. I mean, the Greek Freak, I don't even think he played 20 minutes. So, anyway, I think the most intriguing thing about this whole story with the next upset against the Bucks is somebody actually put $600 down on the, and here's another thing, $600 they put down on the money line to win $8,000. So good for them. In the last 30 seasons, I came across this stat. In the last 30 seasons, teams favored by 19 or more, that record is only 49-2 straight up. Marinating that. Last 30 seasons, teams that are favored by 19, if not more points, have a record of 49-2 straight up. But again, we don't know, like, you know, how many of those games, how many of, you know, those 51 games, how many of them did, you know, the opposing team rest their players? We don't know. Anyway, you got the Lakers. They're playing right now. So Bobby Marks is going to be on, and we'll talk to him about the Nets and what's going on in the NBA bubble. Here's I wouldn't call this breaking news, but here's positive news in an unfortunate, you know, world that we live in where we get so much negative news all the time. How about this? Zero positive COVID-19 tests yet again for another week for the NBA. So out of the 343 players that are in the NBA bubble right now, zero positive tests since July 29th. Zero. How about that? Bubble's working. It's working for the NBA. As of right now, it's working for the NHL. I know the NHL, you know, a much later start than the NBA, but still, it's working. John Breach is going to join us on the show around 9 o'clock. He works for CBS, and in preparing for the show, I came across an interesting article that he wrote for CBS, and that's why I wanted to get him on the show. Talking about, it's very interesting. He put up a proposal in regard to how the NFL needs to scrap their schedule. Like, scrap it. Get rid of it. I know it would cost too much money. You've got 32 teams. You've got so many players. You've got so many staff. You know, a bubble is not logistically, it just, the bubble does not work for the NFL. And probably wouldn't work for Major League Baseball either. Get all that. But I read the article, and I thought it was really clever, and I thought it was really well thought out in regard to how the schedules could not only just, like, get rid of the schedule where the first 7 weeks of the season, you create these mini bubbles and you play within your division. So, for example, the Giants obviously would play Washington twice, Philadelphia twice, Dallas twice, and then get a bye. And then from there, then you move on, and then you go up against another division. I thought it was really, really clever. So I thought it'd be great to have him on the show, and we could really dive into it and discuss it. Because here's the thing. I don't think this NFL thing is going to work. I just don't. So I'm worried about it. If you're scared, say you're scared. I'm telling you, I'm scared. Why? I love the NFL. I love it so much. And I just how the whole situation happened with the Marlins, just by a few players who went out and about a night on the town in Hotlanta and came back, and really we were really on the verge. And I know Manfred said, no, I'm not a quitter. We're gonna keep going. But there was talk, there was discussion that potentially could shut down the season. Here's another thing, keep in mind when it comes to the NFL, and that is You know, the NFL is not playing three game series against one another. You know, it's one game and then on to the next. And so, you know, that leads to a lot more risk. It's a lot more risk in one team infecting another and multiple teams, considering that the incubation period is anywhere between 10 to 14 days and they have one opponent per week, as opposed to, you know, three games against an opponent for a certain number of days. So anyway, I thought it'd be great to have him on. Also, Amari Cooper had some interesting things to say today. Well, I believe he said them yesterday, but we heard them today in regard to what his expectations are this season as a wide receiver in the NFL for the Dallas Cowboys. And not just expectations for himself, but for the wide receiving core for the Giants. So CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper, he said, are all anticipating the goal. The expectation is that all three of them put up 1,000 yards each. Yes, he did say that. So I thought it'd be great. Last time that happened was in Washington with the posse. So I reached out to my good friend Gary Clark, part of the posse, played with the Washington team, right? That's what we're calling it now. And he's going to join us at 8 o'clock. We'll talk some NFL with him, some expectations. I know I've had quite a few people who've hit me up on social media asking me to dive into some more NFL talk as we're getting ready. Our fantasy football drafts are going to be here before we know it. I'm with you. I'm already getting emails from the commissioners asking me what the best date is for the draft. And listen, I'm gonna be honest. I haven't spent a lot of time diving into this just yet, because I've been really apprehensive in spending a lot of time on this, because I don't believe that the NFL season is going to start when we expect it to, or when Roger Goodell expects it to. And I've been saying that for a while, and I very well could be wrong. But I did spend a few hours today looking at some cheat sheets and putting my own cheat sheet together for fantasy football. So I thought it'd be great to have Gary Clark on to hear, you know, just how difficult it is for three wide receivers on a wide receiving core to put up 1,000 yards each. And does he think that the Dallas Cowboys could do that? His thoughts on Amari Cooper, and we'll get into some fantasy football talk, and I'll open up the phone lines and you guys could call in if you've got some questions. And last but not least, probably I've buried the lead, and the lead is there is a major happening right now, and that's the PGA Championship, and Tiger Woods is in San Francisco right now at the TPC Harding Park. That's where it's being played. It's a municipal course, by the way. So for folks who don't play a lot of golf, typically golf courses that host golf events are typically held on private courses, very bougie, bourgeois courses. TPC Harding Park is a course that you can go out to San Francisco. As long as you get a tee time, you can play. And they're very few and far between. Bethpage here, where it was played last year, you know, also is a course that you can book a tee time for. But this is going to be a good one, and it starts tomorrow, and you've got some of the best, not some, you've got all of the best golfers. The first major, usually, if you follow golf, you know that the Masters is typically the first major of the season, but because of COVID-19, that has changed things a bit. You've got Brooks Koepka, who's looking to three-peat. He's won it for the last 2 years. He's trying to win it again this year. So David Berman is going to join us. He oversees our chalk, our gambling site on ESPN.com, and also a lot of our content on Daily Wager. And so he's going to be joining us in our second hour as well. And him and I will get into some of our picks, our plays. Hopefully we can help you win some money this weekend. I feel really good about my plays this week. I was listening to the press conferences yesterday, and Brooks Koepka said, this is a big boy course. Brooks Koepka is so freaking arrogant, and usually rubs me the wrong way, but I just love it. Because here's the thing. It's like Brooks Koepka is arrogant, and he's, he, he could be a real a jerk, and he's fine with it. It's like, this is me. This is who I am. He doesn't. It's not like he's a jerk in real life, and then but tries to pretend to be someone else.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
As far as a public safety issue goes, I probably could have made a better quality decision. I was a little naive in that aspect. I went somewhere after a viewing of somebody I considered a mentor, somebody that I looked up to, first black man that I've seen with legal money in my life. And the funeral home was a couple blocks away from, one of my favorite restaurants. It's been documented how much I talk about this place, how much I eat there. And so I just did something that was routine for me. I frequent that place at that time of day, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. At the time, I thought I was making a responsible decision. After looking back on it, with everything going on in the world and the pandemic, maybe it wasn't the best quality decision. So, I chalk it up as that, take my L and keep moving.
That's Lou Williams explaining his pit stop at Magic City for some lemon chicken wings that did not go over very well. Without further ado, Bobby Marks joins us here on 98.7 ESPN, former executive, now with ESPN as an analyst, talking all things NBA. Bobby, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Anita. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Great to hear your voice. Great to have you on the show. Here's a positive. I always like to look at the glass half full, right? Zero positive tests in the NBA bubble for 343 players since July 29th. So obviously the bubble is working, Bobby, right?
Yeah, no, it's working. I think, and you got to give certainly the league as far as the protocol they put in place. And I think the discipline that, the players have shown. I know you just played that Lou Williams clip, so that was kind of the outlier there. I thought the big week to focus on was right when players got there in early July. As far as you got 22 teams coming from all different places, and you have 343 players, different places. The Raptors were down here in Southwest Florida for about 10 days. As far as if there were going to be some positive tests and how the league was going to kind of mitigate against that. And there wasn't. I think there was maybe two in the beginning, and they've kind of had a shutout since. So still got a long way to go. I always say it's day to day here in life in the NBA, but I think it's certainly encouraging as far as where we are right now.
Very interesting. I'm really big into the PGA Tour. When the PGA Tour first started, their second stop was Hilton Head. Few players went out, came back. Brooks Koepka's caddy got COVID-19. Apparently, the PGA players had to come to Jesus meeting and kind of was like, hey, listen, we all have to hold ourselves accountable. Like, we have to police ourselves. This is our livelihood. You had the NBA hotline. And guys were calling in, ratting out one another, those who weren't wearing masks inside the bubble. And now you had this situation happen with Major League Baseball with the Marlins and the Cardinals. And those players, took some heat with their fellow teammates and other players in the league. I think what we're seeing here, Bobby, is it's like there has to be, like, in my opinion, it's like there's this one situation that kind of, like, rears its ugly head, and then there's this frightening wait, you're telling me that we might have to shut down the season, and then the players come in and they start policing themselves as opposed to the rules that are in place. And but it's interesting with all three sports. It's like, it had to take a step back before it took five forward.
No, you're right. I mean, I think Jason McCourty from the Patriots said it perfectly a week ago when he said, this is not going to work. I see guys at bars on Instagram. I see them at parties. I see them not, socially distant. And you're making for NBA players, it's a little bit different because the NBA is basically policing you. But for MLB players, you're making a 3-month commitment. Can you commit for 3 months, right, to follow the rules in order to get a season in place? And they're not in a bubble. The NFL players will not be in a bubble. Although I saw the article with the Saints as far as kind of being in a controlled environment. So it's going to be up to you you know, each player to figure out if you want a season or you don't want a season, or if you're going to infect your teammates here. So I think you can point to the league that it, the NBA, that it's working, but it is a little bit different when you're in that controlled setting in Orlando, three different hotels, and you're playing, you know, games every night. And then now we're going to probably start seeing teams leave, and the less people that are going to be there. So each league is different, but as I said, it's basically having the discipline for 2 to 3 months here.
It's really fascinating. All right, let's talk about the Nets. They beat the Bucks last night, 119-116. My favorite part of the story was they were getting 19 points, and there was actually one dude who laid $600 on the Nets on the money line and walked away with almost $8,000. And everybody made a big deal about this, but this is what I don't understand. Giannis didn't even play more than 20 minutes. Like they benched their players. The Bucks benched their players down the stretch, but don't they want to lock in first place? Like, you know, are teams balancing out? Like, we're in a bubble. There's no really home court advantage here. Isn't it more in regard to the one or two seed? Isn't it more important to make sure that our players are rested? Is that what they're juggling right now?
Yeah, I think Milwaukee is a little bit different, just because I think, you know, even with the Nets loss, they're in pretty good shape as far as getting that number one seed in the East. I don't think you have to worry about getting the overall number one seed in the NBA, because it doesn't really mean anything as far as from a home court perspective. And that's the, you know, if you're looking at it from a gambling perspective, these games for some are treated like exhibitions. So you don't know exactly who's going to be out there. It is different. You watched Portland-Houston last night, which was a great game. Guys are playing 35, 40 minutes. Miami-Boston last night also. Certainly those teams that are fighting for that 8 spot in the West are playing, you know, heavy, heavy minutes. But on the other end, you might see certain teams starting to rest players, because, as you said, that the seedings don't matter as much. It's kind of about matchups. And I think, Anita, that's why these games have been great, you know, in Orlando, because we've basically removed the home court element from everything. And it's basically, all right, who has the better roster, right? And in some cases, teams are so evenly matched here.
Let's talk about the East, which, by the way, not sure if you're aware, this just came down. Ben Simmons exited the court with a non-contact knee injury. They're not saying if it's significant or not, but he did leave the court. And I'll be honest with you, the non-contact scares me.
They actually showed him in the hallway leaving, I guess, the arena, and he did have a limp going there. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I always said. Like, you got to get to August 17th and 18th in one piece, right? That's going to be the goal for all these teams, is get your roster out of these seeding games and get to the first round in one piece.
So in looking at the East, and I just kind of want to take a look at the seeding with you, in looking at the East, you know, I find that 3 seed very interesting. And, of course, it's going to be – I expect it to be a battle between the Heat and the Celtics. Because from what I understand, if you get the 3 seed, then you're able to avoid the Bucks until the last round. So is that how you're envisioning this play out? But, you know, a battle between Boston and Miami?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of pick your poison a little bit. I mean, if you get the 3 seed, then you might get Philly, right? So that's, you know, it depends on what Philadelphia team shows up. And if you can get past the 6 seed, then you've got Toronto waiting for you. So I think it's all about kind of, it's all about matchups. Who do you match up with? I mean, that Toronto team is really good. I mean, I think they're finally kind of getting their due here. We saw them against the Lakers from a defensive standpoint. They lock you up at the, at the end of games here. They are going to be a tough out. I think if you're at 7 and 8, yeah, I mean, I think Orlando and Brooklyn, I think, you know, Milwaukee and Toronto has a little bit of an easier time, but any of those combinations, that 3-6 match, if you're talking Boston, Philly, or if you're talking Indiana, who's played really well with, you know, TJ Warren, and Miami, those are going to be tough series. But We could be looking at a Final Four in the East. I mean, if you get Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, and potentially Miami, I mean, that's probably as good as it gets.
Again, Bobby Marks joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. And looking at the West, you've got Memphis. Memphis now 0-4 in the bubble, by the way. And as we know, you know, there's a number of teams, Portland, the Spurs, the Pelicans, the Suns, Memphis, who are battling out for that eighth seed. Are you expecting a play-in series? I would imagine so, right?
Yeah, I'm expecting one, but I don't know if we're going to see the Grizzlies there. I think, you know, there was a cushion for them coming into these seeding games. They have not won down in Orlando. They just lost Jaren Jackson Jr. I look at where Portland is right now with, you know, it's a healthy lineup with Nurkic and Collins back. Certainly Carmelo is playing at a good level, and then you've got this all-star backcourt with Lillard and McCollum, and then with New Orleans, yes, they're inconsistent, they're 1-2, but they've got as soft as a schedule, you know, as you can in Orlando. I think they've got Sacramento a couple times. They've got some, you know, really winnable games if they play like they did the other night against Memphis. So you could potentially see Memphis out if they continue to lose. You might get a Portland, New Orleans, you know, play-in game, which would be, you know, really appealing. And potentially you could get a Portland Lakers first round, which would not be an easy, you know, that's not an easy 1-8 matchup for the Lakers.
Are you enjoying these games, Bobby, in the bubble? In watching them and digesting them and enjoying them? What's different to you in watching them?
Yeah, I think it's the best stretch of non-playoff basketball that we've seen in a long time here. I just think it reminds me of, certainly has that college tournament, that NCAA tournament feel, right?
Yes, yes.
Like every game means something. I don't know, maybe it's because games are starting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and we're going five games and it's ending at, you know, 11 o'clock, but it's, you know, it is competitive. I thought that teams, as we talked about earlier, would probably be treating them more like exhibition, but we haven't seen that. Maybe we'll see it on the back end here. But yeah, considering that these guys were off since mid-November, I mean, this is as good as I think we all could probably as expected it.
Do you have a team that you know, a lot of people are expecting the Lakers and the Clippers and the Bucks to win? Is there a team that's flying low on the radar that you just think can be sneaky good and might really shock some people?
You know what? I like Denver, but I need Jamal Murray and Gary Harris back on the court. Will Barton, certainly. That was my team when we picked back in October to get to an NBA Finals. I do like what I've seen from, you know, Michael Porter Jr. here. He's played really well the last couple of games. I think if they can kind of get their depth back and get some of their starters, I do like Denver, you know, in the Western Conference. I think the Harden-Westbrook dynamic and how the Houston plays, I think they are going to be, you know, certainly a tough out here. But we could be looking at it, LA in the West. I think the big thing is kind of getting, you know, Lou Williams is now out of quarantine and played the other night, and Patrick Beverley's got to get healthy, and Montrezl Harrell, if he returns, you know, from his family emergency, that's kind of where their key is their depth.
And again, we've really got to pay attention to the latest in regard to Ben Simmons. So, Bobby, so great to have you on this evening. Please know how much I do appreciate your time and your insight. And it's great to hear you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anita. Talk to you.
You got it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Gary Clark, former wide receiver for that Washington team. Because, Gary, that's what we're calling it now, right?
Yeah, so we are Washington football team. How you doing, Anita?
I'm great. So good to hear your country voice. Oh, gosh, it's been way too long, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How about yourself? I see you're doing fabulous.
Yeah, I tell people, all things considered, I know this is a very difficult time for a lot of people, so all things considered, health, work, happiness, I am blessed. Hopefully you are as well, my friend.
Yeah, I am too.
I was watching Get Up this morning, and Greeny was on with a few of the fellas, and they were talking about the comments that wide receiver Amari Cooper made yesterday, that not only is he expected to put up 1,000 receiving yards, but CeeDee Lamb, who the Dallas Cowboys just drafted, as well as Michael Gallup, that's everybody's expected. to put up 1,000 yards. And I thought about you immediately and I said, oh, let me see. Let me try to get him on the show because, you know, it's something obviously that's rarely ever done in the NFL, and you and your posse were able to do it. So kind of take us back, and you were able to do it without really, like, let's be honest about, you know, without like an Aaron Rodgers or a Tom Brady or, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback. So I'm really curious, you know, there has to be a lack of like, there has to be like selflessness that is involved in that wide receiving core and in that team in order for you to achieve that. Yes.
Yeah. I think the best thing that happened with us was, is we looked at ourselves as a group. You know, I mean, we had a nickname. We were the posse. Actually, we were the first receiving corps to actually have three people go over 1,000 yards. So, but we were all like really good friends, brothers from another mother, so to speak. And we all got along and we always pushed one another. Don't get me wrong. We're all extremely competitive, but we pushed one another to be the best that we can be. And we were proud when each person did what they did at the end of the day.
Gary, was that a goal for you? Like, you know, obviously this is a goal for Amari and the crew. Like, was that a goal for you guys when you went into the season? You were like, we're all going to get 1,000 yards. Or is that something that just happened?
It really just happened. It just came through really good play because we didn't really know that existed. There was no record for three receivers to ever get 1,000 yards because it never had happened before. You had two receivers and a tight end do it before, but not three actually wide receivers had ever got 1,000 yards each. So I know we didn't go into the season thinking that because it had never happened before. Like, but as the season pulled through, and we actually we didn't really start throwing a lot until the second half of the season. That's the funny part about it. That's really when we turned it on, is during the second half of the season. If we'd have been throwing the whole season, whoever knows, we all might have got 1,500 yards or more.
So who, if you could, and I should know this, I apologize. Who was your quarterback and who was your offensive coordinator? Who was your head coach at the time?
Joe Gibbs was our head coach. Offensive right. coordinator was Joe Bugel. And our receiver coach was Charlie Taylor. And Mark Griffin was the quarterback. So we
noticed Mark Griffin.
We had a great quarterback, 100%.
Wow. And who was your running back at the time?
Running back, we probably had 89. I'm thinking, was it Ernest? Do we have Ernest Byners yet?
You know, because and I ask that because here's the thing. I mean, you know, when I think Dallas Cowboys, I think Ezekiel Elliott, right? Like, I think, like, it begins and it. I don't know if a wide receiving core could reach all three wide receivers reach 1,000 yards, especially. You know, if your offense begins and ends with Ezekiel Elliott, and if you look at the numbers, you know, majority of times than not, when Ezekiel Elliott touches the ball at least over 15 times and rushes for 100 yards, that's when the Dallas Cowboys win. Anything under that, they don't.
Yeah, the funny thing about us is, even though we always had three good receivers, we always put up good. Even when we didn't all get 1,000 yards each, we all put up good numbers. Our running backs always got over 1,000 yards, though. I mean, a lot of times our running backs all got 1,000 yards. A lot of times our running backs even make Pro Bowl. So, I mean, we was able to put up those numbers and make sure that our running back, we had a good running game as well. So, it's definitely can be done. And, you know, Amari's a bad boy. And if he's saying it, though, he's not just going to make an open statement like that because media people like yourself is going to hold him accountable to it. Because once he says it, now, you could always be seeing if he's actually going to be able to produce those numbers along with his teammates. Because kind of put his teammates on call. Be like, hey, guys, I've said this. Now, you guys got to back me up so at the end of the day, you don't make me look like a fool.
Again, Gary Clark, join us here on 98.7 ESPN, former wide receiver in the NFL, more specifically with the Washington team and known as the Posse. In looking at the NFL today, I spent some time just kind of like torn around the teams and assessing like who do you think has the best receiving core? And I don't want to say wide receivers because, you know, as we know, tight ends are used so much differently now than they were in the past. A lot more, you know, intricate part of the receiving game, and as opposed to staying home and helping with pass protect. So we know what the Dallas Cowboys are working with: Cleveland, Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, the Saints, Michael Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Jared Cook. Man, you look at Kansas City, Gary, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins. I think Mecole Hardman takes a step up this year in his second year in the NFL. And then, of course, they have Travis Kelce, someone argue one of the best, if not the best tight end in the NFL. And then you got to look at Tom Brady, what he went from to where he is right now. Mike Evans, Godwin, and then you've got the combination of Gronk and O.J. Howard. Just ridiculous. So, you know, out of those teams, what's the one group that stands out to you the most?
Well, quite honestly, I mean, I do like Dallas. I like Dallas receiving core because a lot of times things comes in the new guys on the block. You know, if those guys are able to come up and step up and really produce, they do that. I never bet against Brady. I just don't. I just think that's a lot of times people go against him. That's when he comes out and has his best performances. And he's got a stellar cast to work with. And you got Gronk a part of that. I love Gronk. He's definitely one of the best tight ends that ever played a game. He's also one of the best entertainers to play the game as well. But it's hard. The league is so talented. Quite honestly, I like the receivers that we have here in Washington. It's a young group, but they kind of like caught wind at the end of last year. I like the three receivers that kind of they got here as well. So it's going to be interesting just to see. And I'm far removed from the game, you know, so you probably have a better idea than I do, quite honestly, Anita.
Do you watch the NFL anymore, Gary?
A little bit. I mean, I watch Washington, of course, you know. I'm a big fan of the Washington football team. I'll say just Skins. That way I'm not offending anybody. Not the way I did when I played, of course. I just did, you know, I work, I have a company. So my company is always, we're always working at the end of the day, but it's just that you got such great athletes in the game, but if the Dallas receivers, if they actually are a group of guys who put in the work, that means they put in more than just their talent. Like they put in the work, like after practice, not just the 2 hours, that 2 hours, 3 hours you're in practice. It's the 3 hours before practice and the 3 hours after practice that makes you a great receiver, makes you a great player. So if you find any of those combinations of players, if they do that, that's the next group of three receivers that'll go over and get 1,000 yards. Because that's what we did. We put the work in. Like we put work in before practice and we put the work in after practice. And the work after practice is probably harder than the work we put in during practice. I mean, that's how committed we were to. Once we found out what that was, when people started talking about it, we really, hunkered down and we knew that we was going to make sure that that happened.
Gary, before I let you go, another piece of news. Ron Rivera, obviously, as you know, new head coach of Washington, came out and said that if Alex Smith is healthy enough, that he's going to compete for the starting job. I think everybody, especially if you watch the special that a good friend of mine, Stefania Bell, produced and was a part of for ESPN in regard to all that Alex Smith has been through this past year, how can you not root for this guy? I mean, just unbelievable story and what he's had to come back from. And if he was to be able to even just play a snap and a down, I think immediately he wins comeback player of the year. But your thoughts on Dwayne Haskins and, you know, do you feel that this should be a competition? Do you feel that since the Washington went out and drafted him in the first round, they really have to get a feel for who he is and what he is? And, you know, what's your thought on the quarterback situation right now in Washington, Gary?
Well, I think it's always a competition. That's what makes you great. When you're a player and you don't have any competition, you tend not to play as well because the competition makes you thrive. It makes you better. It makes you work harder. It's like when you come in and get in, you know, and you know that there's nobody that can kind of replace you, your stats kind of go down a little bit. I think that's the kind of across the board. When you know there's nobody that can really challenge you, you kind of like maybe kind of take it easy. You know, instead of working, you know, those 30 minutes to an hour after practice, you kind of go in when practice is over. You don't do the little things that you did to put yourself in that situation. So I think having Alex in the mix is going to make Dwayne a better quarterback. 100%, because
The funny thing about quarterbacks, they tend to push one another and root for one another at the same time. It's an amazing and crazy thing. Every now and then you'll get some bad blood between people because you are going for the same position. At the end of the day, you can only have one starter. But, I mean, all the quarterbacks, for the most part, that I play with, they kind of push one another, but they also help one another, too. So I can also see Alex giving him information that's going to make him a better quarterback in terms of knowledge in the long haul, just because Alex seems to be that type of guy that he would do those things. But I think a lot of people are rooting for him to come back and to be able to come out and step on the field and play, because before he got hurt, he's one of the smartest quarterbacks to play the game. He's a smart quarterback and athletic enough to make plays. And typically, he always puts up good numbers. He always has. I mean, no matter what team he is with, he put up good numbers. So I think having him there as a mentor, plus as somebody that's challenging the young man, I think it's a good thing. Competition's good. And the best player should win the position, just what it is. The best player should always play, in my opinion. You know, I've never been a fan of the person that just because you have the position this year means you have it next year. If that's the case, I wouldn't have started by my fifth game my rookie year if that's the case.
Gary, it's so good to hear your voice. It really is. I have a huge smile on my face. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon. Wishing you and your family, be safe and healthy, and so just know how much I appreciate coming on tonight. Thank you.
My pleasure. Same to you, Anita. You guys have a great day.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, David Berman joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. He oversees all things gambling, our chalk site, Daily Wager. He's our liaison in Las Vegas as well. So, David, good evening. How are you?
Good. How are you, Anita?
I'm all right. I'm doing all right. I'm excited for this weekend. Finally, a major.
We have a major on the docket a couple of months
late. I know. Doesn't it feel weird, though? Because a few things. Number one, I've always said, why is the Masters the first major? It should be it's kind of like the Kentucky Derby, right? Like, I never understood why the two biggest events in their sport start
Daytona
off the season.
500. You can go three sports.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Why don't they? What major is our last major?
Yeah, it depends on what year it is. It's been the PGA Championship, and then it was the British Open.
No, I mean
Open
tonight. I mean tonight. So this year. So we have PGA Championship, and then what's next? Do you know? I don't know.
Yes, U.S. Open's next, and Masters.
Oh,
is last.
Okay.
Masters is like in late October, early November. I think.
So the Masters will be the last major because there is no British Open because they wanted
correct.
To make sure that they were gonna they were insured and they got their money.
I mean, this entire year you can just throw out the window schedule-wise. And technically speaking, for those who are in pools that they do pools on a weekly basis for golf, the end of the 2020 season is technically the Tour Championship. So by on record, this is the only major of the season because the Masters and U.S. Open, people probably don't even realize this, will actually count towards 2021 FedEx Cup points. They're not part of the 2020 season. They're on the 2020 calendar, but the Tour Championship is actually the end of that season. So even though we're going to call it the 2020 major season, they count towards next year. But who's counting?
Before we do dive into our PGA Championship picks, you're a huge Marlins fan. And The Marlins beat the Orioles. The Marlins beat the Orioles last night with their it's worse than a farm team.
Which we're used to because all these years that they have destroyed the team and had to rebuild, it's been one farm team after another, AAA Marlins, we keep joking about it. This year they actually put a team together that looked halfway decent, and then they're all out with COVID-19, and what they have is, I mean, they made about 35 transactions the other day just to fuel the lineup. And they're winning. Now, granted, they're playing the Orioles, but, I mean, they're winning tonight. They haven't allowed a run in August. Let's throw that out there. Zero ERA in August, two straight games. And they're playing well. They're getting it done. The pitching staff's doing well. They're not hitting the crap out of the ball, but, hey, they're in first place. And at least for this moment, they're the only one-loss team in baseball.
Another thing I wanted to throw at you really quick was the Nets. They beat the Bucks. They were getting 19. BetMGM yep. said that some dude put down $600 on the money line and walked away with almost $8,000 last night.
that was one of the largest upsets we've seen. And then we did a piece yesterday. David Purdom worked with our stats and info department, and it was the third largest upset in the last 30 years by point spread. And if you add the fact that there were other upsets like the Suns, the Heat over the Celtics, the Magic were a slight dog. If you had parlayed all those together, 882-1 parlay if you had parlayed all those money lines yesterday.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. So let's try to help people win some money this weekend. Let's start at the top, and that's who we both feel is going to win. I think Brooks Koepka. I believe he's going to three-peat. I like what I saw last week from him at the FedEx Invitational, the WGC FedEx Invitational. If you look at his stats in regard to like the metrics that matter here, strokes gained tee to green, par four scoring, birdie or better, strokes gained on approach, he's up there. He's got the distance. I love what he said this week, David. He said this is a big boy course. So you got to put your big boy pants on, and he's got some big boy pants when it comes to driving the ball. So I love Brooks Koepka. Who do you have winning this week?
We're actually, our names are right next to each other in the column because my first pick is Koepka as well. And we can sit here and say, oh, yeah, they're taking one of the favorites and the two-time defending champ. But what we saw out of Brooks Koepka before last week and what we saw out of Brooks Koepka this last week were two different golfers. And we all know that when it comes to the big stage, there is no bigger player right now than Brooks Koepka. He's a guy that he only had one top 30 in the first five events of the season. But if you look at his record, here's a guy that has four wins, two runner-ups, a T4 and a T6 in his last 10 majors. Four wins, two runner-ups, a T4 and a T6. Like, he's a big-time player. You're talking about putting your big boy pants on. That's what he has. And I know you and I chatted on this very show last Friday after he shot a 62, and we were like, wow, like, where did that come from? That's what Brooks can do. When he's healthy and he's on, he's one of the best golfers on the game, and it's a major, and that's what he does well. And I think we're getting a bargain at 13-1. This is a guy who's a two-time defending champ, and he's won four of the last 10 majors. He should be 7, 8, 9-1. He's only 13-1, and he was 18-20-1 before he shot the 62 last Thursday. So those who bet Koepka about 2 weeks ago are getting a really, really good price. So he is one of the guys I do see. And I've been on the show weekly that I always talk up Daniel Berger, and people are going to be like, he went to Florida State. I'm a Florida guy. Why would I even think about taking this guy? He's a stud. It pains me that I do this every single week, but you just have to look at the numbers and the metrics. Last seven starts dating back to February, six top tens, five of them are top fives, only one missed cut. That's the most on tour in terms of top fives and top tens. All his metrics are in the top 25, fifth in total strokes gained, 13th tee to green, you mentioned, 14th in putting, 24th on approach. The guy has the metrics. He has the game. Other than one event where he missed the cut at Jack's event, he has been the best one since the restart. If you look at all of the rounds, right up there with scoring average and everything, you're getting him at 35-1, Anita. This is not a guy that's 13-1 or 20-1. You're talking about the guy who has the most top fives on tour, who has some of the best metrics on tour. It fits this course, and you can get him at 35-1 and 2-1 to finish in the top 20. That's all this guy does is finish in the top 10. So he's a guy that I really, really want to play this week all over the map. He hasn't won a major, but that's what the PGA Championship is all about. Outside of Koepka's back-to-back and Rory winning two of the last 10, every other PGA Tour championship winner in the last 9 years had been a first-time major winner.
I was home the other day because, there was supposed to be this major hurricane barreling down on New York and New Jersey. We weren't supposed to have power for days. And so anyway, didn't play golf, didn't do anything, sat at home, hunkered down, bought toilet paper, ton of water, did everything I was supposed to do. And we got nothing. God bless.
I'm not crushed here. You're lucky.
I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying. So anyway, long story longer. I was home sitting on my couch and I was watching the Golf Channel and just listening to all the interviews with Tiger and JT and Brooks, and all of them were talking about the rough and how rough the rough is going to be and how important the combination of driving distance and driving accuracy is going to be on this course. So, you know, then of course I go down my deep dark rabbit hole of, you know, trying to find out, you know, all the stats. And the one guy that keeps on coming up, and I want to throw his name out because I don't, in reading the article that's out, by the way, you can see it, it's on our chalk site on ESPN.com, all our picks, myself, the Bear, Doug Kazarian as well, is John Rahm. Driving distance, driving accuracy, at like the combination of being at the top when it comes to those two stats. Also, he's up there in strokes gained, and in around the green, as well as par four scoring. So I'm curious, you know, what are your thoughts on John Rahm coming into this?
He's a guy, I mean, there's probably a handful of guys, three, four, maybe five, that if they hold up the Wanamaker Trophy on Sunday will not surprise me. And you got to put Rahm in that class. He won a few weeks ago. You mentioned all of the metrics and everything that's needed for this course. We talked about this on the show probably 6 weeks ago when we actually were thinking about this major, and you and I both talked about taking John Rahm at this event. He can win it. I would put JT up in there. You know, JT won last week. He's playing as good as anybody on tour. He's, you know, one putt away from having four wins this season already, and two from since we've returned from the layoff. We already mentioned Koepka. Like, these are guys that can be there on Sunday and probably will be there on Sunday. John Rahm has the game to do it. He's one of those guys that you're like, oh, wow, he hasn't won a major. He's young, but he's good. And he is somebody I think that has the game to do it. He's not one of my picks this week, but it wouldn't stun me if he won.
All right. I'm going to throw some other names out there for you that I really, really do like. I've got Schauffele. I've got him finishing in the top five at plus 450, as well as Morikawa at plus 750. I also like Decky at plus 750. In looking at the metrics and how this course plays out, it's bent grass, but the greens aren't very difficult. And Decky has to be one of the best ball strikers on tour. And that's what you're going to need, because temperatures are going to be probably in the low 50s, mid 50s, low 60s. And there's going to be some wind. There's going to be fog. It's going to be really important to be, you know, have your ball striking ability like on tap. Cantlay in the top 10. Here's one. Here's a sneaky pick for you. I'm really big on Tom Lewis right now. Tom Lewis to finish in the top five, 33-1, top 10, 12-1, and to finish in the top 20 at plus 550. I really liked what I've seen from him the last 2 weeks. Your thoughts on Tom Lewis?
I think he can absolutely do exactly what you said, finish in the top 10, top 20. I don't think he's going to win it, but he's somebody that has the game to be able to contend this week that's not on anybody's radar. You mentioned Patrick Cantlay. He's someone that the Bear is very high on. If you read our article today on Chalk, he has Cantlay all over the place. In a pool I'm in with him, he has Cantlay as well. I'll throw two names out there. I took him in the column. I think somebody who flies under the radar and somebody who's young at 25 years old and has, you know, a T3 and a T6 the last 2 weeks and quietly finished in the top 20 in three of the four majors last year, led the field last week in strokes gained putting and a second on tour, Matthew Fitzpatrick. And you're getting him at 40-1, 2.5-1 to finish in the top 20. He's a guy who, like, oh, yeah, Matt Fitzpatrick, he's up there in the top 10. Why didn't I pick him every single week? And you can get 40-1 value and 2-1 to finish in the top 20. One of the long shots I took, just because everybody loves a long shot and his metrics play well here, he's ace on the tour in greens and reg and top 30 in both putting and off the tee, would be Harris English, and you're getting him at 150-1. Don't think he'll win, but if you're going to sprinkle some long shots, he's one I would play out there if you want to take a stab. You mentioned earlier Morikawa. I think both of us are huge fans of Morikawa. I'm playing him against Tiger this week. It's not something I like doing, picking against Tiger, but I think you're getting good value with Morikawa in that matchup.
Yeah, here's another thing for you. I'm focusing in on Cali guys, and Morikawa is out from the West Coast. Schauffele is out in the West Coast, and so is Cantlay. So I'm keeping an eye. Like I'm. And here's another little nugget for you. And I'm up against the break, so I got to make this quick. Fog is expected in the morning. So I'm looking at tee times in the after. So got a guys that I like, and Decky is obviously one of them, and guys that are going to be teeing off in the afternoon when that fog is going to die down. If you spend any time out in California, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be playing Decky to be at the top leaderboard at the end of round one with a combination of A, I like his game, and B, I think conditions are going to be a lot easier for players who are teeing off in the afternoon because that fog's going to be gone.
And we've seen that at other events out in California, whether it be the ones in Torrey Pines, L.A., when the, I believe it was the U.S. Open, was back out there in San Francisco a couple of years ago. You've seen that advantage that you can get with a later tee time. Of course, it flips the next day and those guys are going to play in the fog the next morning. But I agree, if you're looking for somebody to be an end-of-first-round leader, Hideki's a guy who could absolutely get that done. I think that's a good bet.
David, thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. It's so funny, I asked my producer, I said, hey, do you need his phone number? Jacob said, no, we have him on all the time. I said, you know what, we do, don't we? So
I love being on the show. It's a fun time. We get to talk golf. And, I mean, today we talked golf and we talked Florida Marlins. What else could I ask for? Two of my four favorite vices in sports are the Marlins and golf.
So I just know that that I do appreciate your time. Thank you so much, David. Have a great night.
Have a good one. You too.
You got it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.